2SER 107.3.
And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about,
all things theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Yes, let's get on with the show. Half an hour is not going to be long enough tonight. Welcome, welcome to Stages. My name's CL. I'm here with the lovely Trish.
Hi, CL. Glad to be here.
It is exciting. And also, our executive producer will be here, the lovely Regina Botros. She has gone to see, well, actually, you went with her, the must-see play at the moment at Belvoir.
Things We Know to Be True at Belvoir Street. It is amazing.
Standing ovations, I hear. Yep. We will be hearing more about that soon. And also, talking about Once. Now, this is on at the Playhouse Eternity Theatre in Darlinghurst. And Trish, you said you didn't know anything about this musical.
No, nothing.
Nothing. Well, it is absolutely fantastic. Actually, one of my favourite songs is from this musical. We're going to hear a little bit to get us in the mood right now. And chatting with the star right now, the fabulous Toby Francis. Hi, Toby.
Hey, how you doing?
How do you feel taking on this role? Like, it's such a, well, other than Trish, everybody knows this musical.
Yeah, it's pretty big. I remember in the days leading up to it, I thought, how do you live up to Glenn Hansard's voice and that incredible performance in the film? But once you start doing the music, it kind of takes care of itself. I had a friend say to me once, a while ago, when all else fails, just plant your feet, look them in the eyes and tell the truth. So
I think
I'm relying on that, yeah.
Oh, I love that. Were you a fan of the movie and the musical before?
Yeah, I was. I remember auditioning for it when it first came to Australia, when it was in Melbourne. Mm. And I remember my guitar playing was not up to scratch by a long shot. There was probably a couple of other factors there too, but I remember really, really wanting that part. And I was obsessed with the music at the time when the film came out. I was obsessed with it. And I was just playing it over and over again because there's something about a vocal performance that Glenn Hansard gives. He just tears it apart every single time. It's like he has nothing left. You don't know how he keeps singing, but he does.
Well, Toby, I should say you and I are big fans. But for everyone who isn't, tell us what is the musical about?
So the musical is about two people, Guy and Girl. Guy is an Irish busker in Dublin who... is heartbroken and despondent and ready to give up on music. And he meets Girl, who is a Czech immigrant who plays piano and comes tumbling into his life as this large personality who sort of won't take no for an answer and doesn't sit on her hands. And it's about how they change each other over the course of 5 days.
Oh, really? And so it's a story really for lovers, is it? So it's kind of a universal love story or a really specific love story, do you think?
I think it's a really honest love story, to be honest. I almost said honest twice. I don't know, I will. I'm just going to lean into it. Yeah, I think it's an honest love story that, I mean, life can be imperfect, but it can also be incredibly beautiful. And I think we put a lot of pressure on, I know I have in the past put a lot of pressure on myself with relationships or things like that where you go, oh, we're in love or this thing is happening, so therefore it has to lead to this. But it's not always the place of things like that. And she comes into his life at a time when they sort of both need each other and there is this pure love there, but it doesn't sort of go exactly the way you would expect of a romance, but it is about love at its heart.
Oh, that sounds really great. And you've got such an amazing cast. You've got Cameron Daddo and Toby Francis and...
Your Toby Francis.
And Stephanie Kakame and like... And Joanna Weinberg, like so many people.
Yeah.
Drew Livingston.
Yeah, it's an amazing cast. It's so good that everyone plays. I thought I was coming into the room going, yeah, I play guitar and I sing, so I've got a couple of, you know, arrows in my quiver. And then you surround yourself with these people who have never played a mandolin and learn the mandolin in 4 weeks and play professionally.
Oh, I hate those people.
Yeah, if they weren't so nice, I would too. But, yeah, it's an astonishing cast and everyone's sort of everyone really gets on. There's this saying, like, if there's someone in the company who's just, you know, not very kind, that's not the word we use, but, you know, if there's someone in the company unkind person, shall we call them, if you can't find them, it's probably you. And so I spent a couple of weeks worrying that it might have been me because there's no one in that cast who isn't so lovely, which sounds like a line, but it's not. They're astonishingly talented and very kind.
But obviously there's more than two characters then, isn't there, with such a huge cast? So are they company or do they have roles?
Yeah, no, everyone plays the same role all the way through the show.
Oh, okay.
Cameron Daddo plays my dad, plays Dar. Mm-hmm. He's a man who's lost his wife and probably as despondent as Guy is, but maybe on the other side of it. Joanna Weinberg is the mum of Girl. Various other cast members are sort of other Czech immigrants who live in the house or other Irish people at the studio. Or Rupert Reed plays Billy, who owns a music shop, who's an absolutely insane character who is obsessed with karate, which has come about. Drew Livingston. It took me so long. There's this one scene with Drew Livingston who plays a bank manager that we get a loan from. And I was crying with laughter until literally the day before the first preview. Yeah, I was so stressed that I was going to corpse all the way through this scene and ruin it. But he's so funny. Yeah, everyone plays sort of one person and comes all the way through. And Vicky Falconer Pritchard, who plays Razor, is also our MD. So she plays a role. She plays the saw, the violin, and she's our musical director. It's astonishing. And then you've got people like Joe Acaria, who's this incredible drummer who's never acted before and leaves so many people for dead. He just comes on stage and has this great technique. Like, he's just
a natural.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He goes, oh, great. Never acted before, can drum, and then just comes in as an actor. Yeah, I'll just say the words. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I've got all these romantic ideas of you all jamming into the night after the show with wine, etc., but you're probably all going home and having a green smoothie and being very good and getting up early. Is that the way it goes now in theatre?
Yeah, it's very rock and roll. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the end of tech week, we do. We go straight home to bed because you're pulling such long days. But those first sort of rehearsals, we were all playing. There was no lunch break that wasn't full of music. There was no time where we're not like sharing songs on the Facebook group and things like that. And I think as the show kicks on, we might sort of keep playing. But as it came to crunch time and we're plotting all the lights and we're doing very long days, there became a quick rule of no noodling on the guitar because everyone was just playing all the time, just driving people nuts playing 10 different versions of Stairway to Heaven.
Oh, well, it sounds like it's going to be absolutely magic. Lots of joy, lots of beautiful music. It is on until the 21st of July. Make sure you get out and see it once. Well, actually, you could see it twice if you wanted to.
Three times.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us, Toby.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks.
Once at the Playhouse Eternity Theatre. Well, someone who is also gadding about town is the lovely Lucy Tiger. She was at the Annandale Hotel the other night and she's going to be at the Mosh Pit in Newtown on July 10.
How exciting.
I know. Like I'm a big fan. Let's see what you think. Here's a bit of Lucy Tiger.
definitely. And I think we have a review from Regina. Regina, what have you been out to see?
Thanks, Tricia. Well, you know what I've been to see because we went together. Things I Know to Be True, which is playing at Belvoir Theatre. If a play is meant to reflect the contemporary world back to you and to make you feel something, well, this play has done its job with flying colours. Things I Know to Be True is written by Andrew Bovell. Think When the Rain Stops Falling, or the adaptation of The Secret River, or for film Lantana, and he also worked on Strictly Ballroom. Things I Know to Be True is a master stroke. It's directed by Neil Armfield, who's back in his former home of Belvoir Theatre. It tracks the life over a year of the Price family, a family of six in suburban Adelaide. A family full of love and drama, and it's an adult family. The four children have grown, they're in their 20s and 30s, and the key of this play is, I think, about identity. Dad has been forced into an early retirement and only has his rose garden to tend, watching the seasons of the year as a metaphor for the change in his life. And these roses, this rose garden is well pruned, well taken care of, and well loved, but that is it for him in his life. This metaphor is really interesting because it comes around at the end. The messiness of life takes over. Each child is facing these identity issues over the course of the play. We meet each of them in their messy chaos. At the centre is Mum, who has worked hard and has every little thing covered, from the dinners to pick up times. There's a conservative edge to her with a realistic grounding in her character. This woman is a nurse and she's seen things in her life. She is, you know, real and grounded and stoic and blunt. We love her and we trust her. And even if we don't agree with her, we know her. And it's clear she has worked hard for the family and made sacrifices, but her ideals are well pitched in our contemporary world. The shock of this play ricochets through you, and we're taken right into this family through the writing of the well-defined characters, the wonderful direction of Armfield. Tony Martin as the dad is warm and wonderful. Annalise lives out her mum's dreams. All the cast are absolutely wonderful, but most notably Helen Thompson as Mum. Wow. She knows you by the inflection of your voice or the particular word you choose, the subtlety that only a mum sees, the woman that has watched you your whole life. Helen really grasps this role with her teeth and throws it around like a dog with a toy. Like, she is so inside it. This is what theatre is about. It cuts you to the core and it's messy and rambling like every family. If you can, get along. It's only on until the 21st of July. That's Things I Know to Be True by Andrew Bovell.
Standing ovations all over
the
place.
I stood up.
Wow. Oh.
And I rarely stand up, even though I need to stretch my legs.
Well, if you can, beg, borrow or steal a ticket, do it.
Yes,
Belvoir.
Definitely.
The applause. Oh, Lucy Tiger playing at the Mosh Pit in Newtown, July 10. Check her out. We Are the Himalayas is a play that's been shortlisted for the 2019 Patrick White Playwrights Award. How good is that? Mm. We are speaking with the fabulous director, Richard Cornally. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Now, tell us all about this play, because I am quite, I don't know anything about it.
Well, where to begin? I guess I'll start with the main character. The play centres on the first year or so of the time spent in the Gulag, in the Russian prison system, of a woman named Anna Larina. Anna was the wife of a man named Nikolai Bukharin, who was one of the heroes of the Russian Revolution, who were great friends with Lenin and Stalin and all of those very interesting characters of history. And he was one of the first victims of the Stalinist purges in the late 30s. So he was tried for treason and executed, and she was arrested at about the same time. So our story picks up her time leading up to his arrest and also her first year in the gulag as she was struggling to find the reason, the purpose, and the will to survive in that terrible place.
I said, well, I just wonder what had Anna done to, I mean, I know that they were pretty, you know, just putting everyone in those gulags and stuff, but what had Anna Larina actually done to draw attention to her, just being Nikolai's wife, or was it something she did?
No, not at all. In fact, she was innocent in many, many ways. She was 26 years his junior. Mm-hmm. Her father himself was one of the great kind of communist figures, a guy named Yuri Larin. And one of the bylines for our show is arrested for being a wife and a mother, and that's really what her guilt was being the woman that that Nikolai loved and that she loved in return. Stalin was a very jealous man, and Nikolai was somebody who was very much loved by the population of Russia and esteemed by a lot of his peers. And so I don't think it needed much more than that to attract his wrath.
It was such a awful time of history, and it's interesting that, you know, this subject matter is coming up now. I mean, I'm just thinking about
collaborators at the New Theatre.
Yeah. What's do you think it's got a relevance to anything that's happening today, right now?
Oh, I could probably talk to you about that for hours. I really could. I think there is so much.
Because I feel relevant. Like it does. Yeah, like. And so much, because the Russian Revolution was so hopeful, you know, like when Obama came to power, it was so hopeful. And then Stalin, I mean, not that Trump is Stalin, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot about it that's relevant. I think we live in, you know, this epithet that's thrown around, this idea of the post-facts world. You know, Russia was very much, Soviet Russia, communist Russia was very much an environment where truth was what was in the government-controlled media. There was certainly no such thing as investigative journalism or anything like that. So I think that's it's very different now, but it's the same fundamental kind of concept that we're seeing showing up as an individual in any society these days. You can't really trust your source of information, no matter where it comes from. And that creates a lot of anxiety and uncertainty, and I think that's very similar.
Absolutely.
And I've noticed in a lot of the recent productions, all productions about Stalin, he's quite often portrayed as a buffoon, you know, with a large moustache, and it's very comically done. But is yours more around the character of Anna Larina more than Stalin appearing?
Yeah, Stalin doesn't come into our show because we kind of feel like that. When I was working with Mark Langham, the writer, I know that he felt that material, that figure, had been explored so much. That we wanted to offer a different point of view. So we focused very much on Anna, on her husband Nikolai, and on a figure named Lavrenty Beria, who was Stalin's majordomo, kind of his iron fist, if you like, who enacted a lot of his more horrific policies.
And does your production take us actually into the gulags? Is that where we're going in this play?
Absolutely. That's what we've tried to focus on in our production design, is making it feel as much as we can without, you know, putting you through an equally horrific experience. Make it feel as close as we can to what it would have been like to be in these places.
And why Anna? Why do you think you've chosen her as a central character? Is she a stranger in a strange land, or the innocent, or is it that sort of thing? Is that the attraction to her, or does she have something else about her that makes her the centre of this play?
Well, I can talk to you about what I found most attractive about Anna. You know, I think ultimately the choice of why to centre around her is Mark's to answer, because that was his decision. But what drew me to the script was that, despite the horror of this place, it is still a story of hope and of the power of the human spirit. And on the power of having a purpose and having something to live for that's larger than yourself, I really think that that's what ultimately drove Anna to survive not just the 20 years in the gulag, but the 20 years it then took her to have the truth be told about what happened to her and her husband, and to rehabilitate his name within Russia.
I'm seeing a glimmer of a happy ending, happy days.
bittersweet is what I call it.
Right. Yeah. But speaking of trials and tribulations, this production was faced with a few trials and tribulations of its own.
That's right. Yeah, we've had a few, one major hiccup along the way.
And that's the closing down of Limelight, that you were going to go on at Limelight, and now where are you going on it?
We were booked in for Limelight. Sadly, they had to close their doors. But wonderfully, we were saved by Kerry Glascock and the crew at the Sydney Fringe Festival. So they're opening up a new space on Bayswater Road in King's Cross, which will be the Sydney Fringe HQ. And they came to our rescue. They were our delivering saints, our guardian angels. And so we're going to be the first production in this fantastic new space.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, see, look, it was meant to be. That is a happy ending. We Are the Himalayas is going to be on Bayswater Road, King's Cross, starting on the 3rd, going to the 21st. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it is a jam-packed show, as I said. We've got a review. Trish, what have you been out and about to see?
I went and saw Girl in the Machine at Lennox Theatre out at Parramatta. Yeah.
Heaps of people are excited about this.
Yeah, it's a really great little one-act play. And it's been written by Steph Smith, a Scottish writer, directed by Claudia Barry, I'm pretty sure. And it is absolutely fantastic. What it is you walk in and there's a glass box, and at first that did put me off a bit because I thought, oh, actors in a glass box and the sound was a bit bad. But then you just got into what the actors were doing and you completely forgot that. It's a lot about the story taking place in a lounge room of this very loving couple, Owen and Polly, over the course of several months. And they're hardworking. They're young. Owen is a nurse who works in palliative care. So he has a lot of real experiences with real people. And he's a really warm-hearted, sort of really nice guy. And Polly is an attorney. She's a bit of a workaholic and she's unable to switch off from the demands of the workplace. So Owen's aware that she has this stress. So he brings home a black box, which came unexpectedly to the hospital. And he gives it to Holly and she links it to, everyone has a citizenship in this, like a chip under your arm. And that means you're a citizen of the country that you're in, Australia, they put it in. And so it links to that and then it just makes you relax. So
Oh, when can I get one of those?
Oh, yeah, I know. It did look pretty amazing, except, of course, it brings up the ramifications of addiction and technology and politics, and it's very creative in the way that it looks at all of those issues through this. Polly does become very addicted, but then there's also this sort of big daddy mainframe sort of idea where perhaps the AI is manipulating the people as well as the politicians manipulating the people. But I can't tell you exactly what happens because I would be spoiling it.
So interesting though, because much like that's such a social commentary on you know our time. You know, Google decides what we see, and politicians you know tell alternative facts, etc., etc.
Yeah, well, even though this was science fiction, I really felt like a lot of the stuff that was happening in the play is happening now,
like Black Mirror. Yeah,
it was a lot like a Black Mirror, and and he was saying stuff to her like be present," and trying to take her away from the devices, but the devices took over her world more and more. I went with a teenager and she was very impressed by it, but it was also a good thing to go to a teenager with because they're all addicted.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, it sounds familiar.
But it's also that this wasn't preachy, you know, because it just told a story, a really interesting sort of dark science fiction story. And it's about the power of love and the power of addiction and those two things pulling at each other. I won't say which wins, but the love in this I thought was really beautiful. I mean, you could say the love was an addiction, but I also thought the love in this was really pure because it was about human contact and even Owen talks about how the AI machines are going to take over, you know, wiping bottoms and wiping mouths and, you know, helping people through death. And it's like machines can't do that. I mean, we have to draw the line and say, you know, we need people. People are important. People have emotions and faces and all kinds of loopy behaviour, and we need them.
Absolutely. We're not obsolete yet. Now, can we still go and see this play?
Well, it's not on at Parramatta. I'm not quite sure where it's going to turn up again, but I know it is touring around. So keep an eye out for Girl in the Machine. It is fabulous. I don't think they knew how good it was going to be. I think they should have had a longer run.
Oh, absolutely.
To SER wishes to acknowledge the custodians of the land from which we broadcast, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and the Wadumatagal clan of the Darug Nation, and their elders past, present and emerging. We acknowledge and respect their continuing culture and the contribution they make to the life of this city and this region.
Well, I can't believe that it's time to go already.
Oh, I know. Jam-packed show as usual.
Absolutely. And next week.
I know. The reopening of Muriel's Wedding.
Oh, you're terrible, Muriel. I think the whole of Australia loves this movie, and now we get to see it on stage.
Definitely.
We'll be telling you all about it to get us in the mood before we go. Oh, and with special thanks to our executive producer, Regina Botros, for putting the show together, as always. And stick around for Film Fight Club. But as I was saying, we're going to get in the mood for a bit of Muriel's Wedding. You know you want to. Take us out, ABBA.